Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. We're continuing our election 2008 coverage. This week, we're learning more about the national security and foreign policy views of the leading presidential candidates. Yesterday, we spoke with the senior foreign policy advisor for the John McCain campaign. Today, we welcome a national security advisor to the Barack Obama campaign. Joining us, Richard Clark. My guest was chief counterterrorism advisor on the U.S. National Security Council in the Clinton and Bush administrations until his retirement in January 2003. Welcome, Richard Clark. Good to have you here today.
It's good to be with you, Fred.
And we're at 614-292-8513. If you have a question, you can email a comment or question to openline at wosu.org. Senator Obama said that indeed, in one of his speeches, in fact, it was the acceptance speech at the convention, that the Senator McCain had said he would follow Osama bin Laden into hell, but had failed to follow him even into Pakistan. But the question is this: is it necessary? Is not Al Qaeda, at least the Osama bin Laden brand of Al Qaeda, so defeated that there is no great necessity to move on Osama bin Laden himself?
Well, quite the opposite. According to the Director of National Intelligence, Admiral McConnell, according to the CIA and its latest national intelligence estimate, all of these high-level intelligence sources are saying publicly into the Congress that al-Qaeda is stronger now than it has been in years, that it has reconstituted in Pakistan along the Pakistan-Afghan border. And according to the national intelligence estimate, it now poses a threat again to the United States in the United States. McConnell in particular pointed out that there are European-looking people who have been trained at these camps. And the CIA director said, if you were standing next to some of these people in line at an airport, they wouldn't stand out. Mm-hmm. So I think we have every reason to worry that al-Qaeda is back. After all, they were part of the organization that blew up the Marriott Hotel last Saturday. Mm-hmm. Killing 57 people in Islamabad. They were the organization that attacked the American embassy a week ago Wednesday in Yemen, two attacks in 1 week. And they are very much still alive, and we have to go after them.
When you say go after them, does Senator Obama feel that it is necessary to cross the Pakistan border into Pakistan with troops in order to go after them, with or without the permission of the Pakistani government?
Well, I think what Senator Obama has said, and it's very instructive to compare with what Senator McCain said. A year ago, Senator Obama said, al-Qaeda are the enemy. They are getting stronger. They are winning in Afghanistan. We have to have a comprehensive solution that involves diplomatic, economic, intelligence, and military operations. A year later, the head of the U.S. military, Admiral Mullins, said the same thing. And he said we need to send two brigades, additional forces, into Afghanistan. That's what Barack Obama had said 14 months earlier. So Barack Obama has a record, whether it's on Iraq or Afghanistan, national security issues, having seen around the corner, having been ahead of the curve, just as he called for a timeline to get out of Iraq, and everyone said no. And then later the prime minister of Iraq said we need a timeline, and the United States agreed to one. Over 2 years after Barack said we need one. So Obama has a way of being right on these things and being ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm. So just as the Bush administration did in preceding weeks and sent in hot pursuit American troops into the Pakistani border area, do we do that in hot pursuit of Osama bin Laden?
Well, what Senator Obama said was if we have good intelligence that there's a high-value target like bin Laden or his deputy Ayman Zawahiri, across the border, and we think the Pakistanis either can't or won't go after him, then it's the duty of the commander-in-chief to get the guy who attacked us on 9/11, who killed 3,000 people in New York and in Washington. And Senator McCain said, well, that would be a violation of Pakistani sovereignty. And you know, Senator McCain had earlier said about Afghanistan that we should just muddle through. That's a quote. So I think the contrast is very stark between a man who sees where the real threat is and will do something about it and somebody who's more concerned about muddling through because he wants to stay in Iraq.
What is Senator Obama's proposal in terms of an increase in troop strength in Afghanistan? By what number would he propose, and over what period of time to increase troop strength?
He said in August of 2007, so 14 months ago, 13 months ago, Barack Obama said he thought two brigades, that's about 7,000, 8,000 troops. And Admiral Mullins has now said the same thing, that he wants about two brigades. Admiral Mullins and Secretary of Defense Gates have said that they think they could do that beginning sometime in 2009.
How would they be employed in terms of strategy and tactics?
Well, the strategy has to be to build up the Afghan army and to provide a security shield behind which the Afghan army can be trained and can then begin to make these villagers feel more secure and get the villagers growing things other than heroin. You know, the largest cash crop in Afghanistan right now is heroin. And the money from that is making its way to the terrorists. So the American forces have to train the Afghans because this, at the end of the day, this has to be their struggle. But right now the Afghans need help, more help than they're getting, to provide that security shield behind which they can rebuild their country.
Afghan President Hamid Karzai has repeatedly expressed concern about the number of civilian casualties at the hands of NATO troops in bombing runs. And recently we have up to 90 villages allegedly killed, innocents. Does Senator Obama have a solution to that?
Well, what Senator Obama has said, and he's advised by former Air Force General Scott Gration, and what Scott has said is, sometimes when our troops are insufficient and they're outnumbered, they need to call in airstrikes. And airstrikes, whatever we may think, are not always as precise as they should be, and it's a very risky thing to call in airstrikes. If we had more ground forces in these high-tension areas, then we wouldn't need to call in airstrikes as much and run the risk of bombing the wrong people. So part of the solution is getting those two additional brigades out there. You know, not to stay there forever, but to give enough of a shield to the Afghan people so they can defeat al-Qaeda and the Taliban in their own country.
Richard Clark is National Security Advisor to the Barack Obama campaign. We're at 614-292-8513. Dick, does Senator Obama believe that Georgia and the Ukraine should be admitted into NATO?
Well, I think he is willing to consult with the other NATO allies on that. You know, right now we're in a situation where we have created a major confrontation with Russia. Now, Russia did some very unacceptable things. Georgia may have provoked some of them. But I think we need to take the advice of people like former Secretary of State Jim Baker, former Secretary of State Colin Powell, who have been saying we need to look at Georgia in the context of our overall relations with Russia. We need the Russians to do certain things like help us stop Iran from getting a nuclear bomb. And we really need to have a priority list of what our interests are with Russia and not alienate them needlessly. And Senator McCain is alienating them needlessly. He said he will throw them out of the group of eight leading nations. Well, that's no way to start a negotiation.
Russia has repeatedly expressed concerns about Georgia and the Ukraine being admitted into NATO. They don't want that to happen. For some reason, they find that threatening. Given that, should Senator Obama forthrightly declare that he does not support their admission into NATO?
No, I don't think Senator Obama is saying that at all. What he's saying is that the admission into NATO is a multi-year, multi-stage process. That's how NATO has established it. There's a membership process that goes on for several years. And whether or not that process should be initiated now or whether it should be initiated next year is something I think that the senator would want to consult with his NATO allies on. Again, in the context of our overall relations, there's no doubt that the United States supports Georgia and its democracy and Ukraine and its democracy. These are very, very important countries to the United States. It's a question of how the process evolves to get them secure and to get them into a position where they can't be pushed around by Russia.
Russian troops remain in South Ossetia and Abkhazia, I believe, and also Russia has declared that those regions are independent of the nation of Georgia. Has Senator Obama spoken about how he might approach that problem with Russia?
Well, first of all, Senator Obama has said that we should not recognize those unilateral declarations of independence by these microstates. And what he's supporting is a multilateral effort to negotiate a way forward here. Now, the European Union wants to send more military observers in there. The Organization of Security and Cooperation in Europe, which the United States is part of, wants to send more observers in. Right now, the Russians are blocking that. But I think, again, if we have a negotiating relationship with Russia, where we're not calling them names, where we're not trying to throw them out of organizations the way Senator McCain has proposed, then we may be able to negotiate things like that more successfully.
We've not had another 9/11, obviously, and so can we conclude that, in fact, Bush administration efforts together with the international community's efforts have been successful in preventing that, the buildup of that kind of capacity on the part of al-Qaeda and other radical organizations? And how would, as part of this question, how would an Obama administration make sure that we continued to have that capacity to deal with the 9/11 potential?
Well, I think what we said at the top of this discussion is relevant here, and that is that CIA and the intelligence community now believe that al-Qaeda is strong again and once again poses a threat to the United States, including in the United States. There was a period of time after the U.S. went into Afghanistan in October of 2001 when we clearly threw al-Qaeda for a loop. Many of their leaders were captured or killed. Others scattered. It took them a while. It took them several years to rebuild and reestablish themselves in the northwest quadrant of Pakistan. So for a period of 2 or 3 years, they really didn't pose a threat. And that's why I think they were not capable then of attacking us. The sad news is, according to the Bush administration itself, that they are now again capable of attacking us. So how do we go about dealing with that? It's going to be a multi-pronged approach. As the 9/11 Commission said, we have to win the battle of ideas so that we destroy their ideological appeal to people. We also have to use law enforcement and intelligence, not only ours, but those of our friends, which need to be enhanced, to find these people, to find these cells, to find these training camps all overseas. Domestically, there are still lots of vulnerabilities that we need to fix in this country. You know, the day after 9/11, we began making lists of things that needed to be done to reduce our vulnerabilities here at home, and they have not been done. The only thing that's really improved in security is the screening of passengers going on aircraft.
No, we've not secured our ports, for example.
We haven't secured our ports. We haven't secured our borders. We haven't really given the capabilities to our first responders that they need. You know, our first responders still do not have a secure, reliable, interoperable communication system and the spectrum that they need so that our fire departments and police departments can communicate with each other effectively in a major crisis across jurisdictions. That is a relatively easy thing to do, and still it hasn't been done 7 years on. There's a whole list of these things in Homeland Security that haven't been done because Homeland Security has become a political football. There are more political appointees in the Department of Homeland Security than there are as a percentage in any other federal department, a place where there should be fewer or none. And it's filled with Bush political hacks.
What does Senator Obama propose to do about that? Were he elected?
Well, he proposes that we professionalize Homeland Security, that we significantly reduce the number of political appointees to a very, very few, and that we bring in the first responder professionals and the security professionals. But we do it with oversight, and we do it consistent with our values about civil liberties and the Constitution, that we restore habeas corpus, that we stop warrantless wiretaps, and that we once again put the rule of law back in place. We believe, Senator Obama believes, and his advisors believe, that we can be secure and defeat the terrorists without ripping up the Constitution.
When we talk about securing borders, securing ports, and the other list of things that you mentioned we have not done, that sounds like a very expensive proposition. How would an Obama administration finance that?
Well, securing ports is a good example of why actually it's not all that expensive. There are only four or five major container shipping companies in the world that operate through our ports, and they have all said that they will move to a smart container that would be easily inspected. They will do that. They will make the containers. They will come up with a system to government standards if only the government would agree. And incredibly, the United States government has dawdled and not agreed to that. The cost of the shipping container inspection program can be borne by the shippers. And now, admittedly, that is a small cost that is passed on to the consumer, but by the time it gets down to the consumer, it's so small that no one will notice it. But it will make our country a lot more secure.
How will the shipper inspect all the, I don't know, tens of thousands, I don't know how many of the shipping cartons come into the United States every day, but how would shippers inspect them?
Well, they don't inspect them. What they would do would be to shift to a new kind of container over a period of 3 years. And that new kind of container would be a smart container, which would involve technology that would allow the customs folks to plug in and quickly know what's inside, to be able to see and sense what's inside the container very rapidly.
Including any nuclear materials, for example.
Including the possibility of a nuclear bomb being smuggled into our country, which right now, unfortunately, could happen relatively easily.
The fact that it happens, do you attribute that to luck?
The fact that it hasn't been smuggled in?
Yeah.
Well, I think there are a couple of things. First of all, it's hard for a terrorist group to handle nuclear material, thankfully. And nuclear bombs, finished bombs, are fairly well guarded around the world, even in places like Pakistan. Where Senator Obama has said we need to do more is on radiological material, which is largely unguarded. There are hundreds of tons of radiological material around the world. They don't get the kind of security that nuclear bombs do. But they could be made into dirty bombs, radiological dispersal devices.
Mm-hmm.
So Senator Obama has called for a major program to lock down and secure these radiological sources around the world through the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency.
What would be the approach of an Obama administration to Iran's possible acquisition of nuclear weapons? I mean, would it be different in any sense than the Bush administration? We are negotiating, and we are negotiating in concert with our European allies. How would it differ?
Well, we're not negotiating. You know, we had one meeting where an American diplomat was allowed by Secretary Rice to go to the meeting, but he wasn't allowed to say anything. It's sort of incredible. Senator Obama believes that it is not a sign of weakness on the part of the United States to negotiate with people, to have diplomatic relations with people, and to talk. We talked under Ronald Reagan. We talked with the evil empire. We negotiated with the Soviet Union. I worked for Ronald Reagan and was part of those negotiating teams. And yet the Bush administration seems to fear diplomacy. It seems to think that we somehow reward other countries by talking to them. Talking to them is essential if we're going to find a way of avoiding military conflict. And Senator Obama has said that the acquisition of a nuclear weapons capability by Iran is unacceptable. And he would look at every means, working with our friends, our many friends and allies in the region and in Europe, and Russia, to stop that acquisition. But the first step is not, as Senator McCain said one day, to bomb Iran. The first step is to have a wide-ranging discussion with Iran, no preconditions. And it's interesting. All of our living former secretaries of state, all five of them, were asked this question the other night. And three of them are Republicans. And they all said, absolutely, we should be negotiating with Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the Bush administration, McCain, are for some reason reluctant They think this is a sign of weakness to negotiate. It's not. It's never been a sign of weakness. When Ronald Reagan did it, when John Kennedy did it, to negotiate with our enemies has always been a logical thing to do to avoid conflict.
Under what circumstances would bombing Iran be appropriate for an Obama administration? Senator Obama has not taken that element off the table, has he?
No, he hasn't, but he said it's something that he's obviously hoping that is not necessary, and he's hoping and has plans for negotiations that will get us what we want, which is to stop Iran from becoming a nuclear power.
Mm-hmm. What now? Israel has there's been some suggestions that Israel might undertake a bombing attack on Iran against suspected nuclear installations on its own. Is that something an Obama administration would encourage, discourage, or be neutral about?
I think the current administration has already communicated to Israel that it's premature for Israel or the United States to move toward a military solution to this potential Iranian nuclear capability. And I think what the Bush administration has told Israel is what, at least for the time being, at this point in the process, the Obama administration would also say it's premature. The United States under President Obama would be completely committed to the security of Israel. He has proposed a $30 billion military assistance program and an MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, with Israel to ensure that they are militarily strong and secure against the new threats. And he has, and especially in his remarks on the subject to the AIPAC convention, made it very clear that the United States under President Obama would see Israel as a strategic ally and would work with them to ensure their safety and security. Now, the question becomes, how do we do that vis-a-vis Iran, and when and if do you have to use military means? That's something that a President Obama would want to negotiate with the Israeli leadership, consult with the Israeli leadership on, and hopefully convince them to try diplomacy first.
How about an Obama administration approach the Israeli-Palestinian divide? Of course, President Bush has supported strongly a two-state solution. Does Senator Obama support that? And how would he go about working toward it?
He does support a two-state solution. What he has said is the last two administrations, both Clinton and Bush, tried in the last year of their eight-year presidencies to get a negotiated peace going. And President Clinton personally got involved and almost made it with the Camp David negotiations as his administration drew down in its final days. President Bush has not been personally involved. What Senator Obama has said is he will be personally involved in ensuring that there is a negotiation between Israel and the Palestinians. And he will be personally involved from the first year, not wait until year seven or year eight. Because on this particular issue, it requires personal presidential knowledge, understanding of the detail, involvement on a personal level, and it will take time. So he believes that he would begin in the first year working on this as a high priority, because in the long run, the only way that Israel's security can really be guaranteed is through a combination of military superiority and a negotiated settlement that preserves and protects Israel's interests.
In the final 2 minutes here, Dick, Senator McCain has criticized the Bush administration's attitude toward our European partners and has criticized this independent course of the Bush administration and the criticism of old Europe that we heard from the former Secretary of Defense. I presume that Senator Obama shares that criticism with Senator McCain. What would he do to repair relations with our European allies?
Well, I think you saw when Senator Obama went to Germany and France and England, that the reaction there, not only of the people in the streets, but of the prime ministers and presidents and chancellors of Europe, was extremely positive. And I think the mere election of Barack Obama as president of the United States would go a long way toward repairing the damaged relations between us and our traditional allies that have to bear some of the burden, so we don't have to do everything.
You say the mere election, but is there has Senator Obama articulated a significant proposal? I mean, a step process, let's say, for repairing such relationships?
Well, I'm not sure that he has, and I think it doesn't take an elaborate proposal. I think it takes getting back to working through channels with NATO as an equal. And Senator Obama has talked about stopping the American habit of lecturing and starting the American habit of listening to our allies.
Mm-hmm. Richard Clark is a national security and foreign policy advisor to the Barack Obama campaign. We thank you very much for being with us this past half hour.
That's great to be with you.
Back after these messages at WOSU 820 NPR News.
Next time on Day to Day.
The best students don't always make it to the best colleges.
How many newspaper articles do you read about the valedictorian with 1,600 scores who didn't get into this school or that school?
But college admissions coach Michelle Hernandez offers kids a better shot.
And plenty of parents are willing to pay her $14,000 to get it.
Yeah, I think I make a huge difference.
Personal coaching to get into college.
Next time on Day to Day.
That story will be coming up on Day to Day, which begins at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning, I'm Amy Jurevich. Thanks for joining us for Open Line this morning. And remember, take Fred Anderle with you on your early morning dog walk. Take Fred for an afternoon run on the treadmill. Listen to Open Line with Fred Anderle anytime, anywhere with the Open Line podcast. Log on to the iTunes Music Store and search Open Line. Or just go to our website, wosu.org/openline. Are you hungry for more than headlines and short sound bites about our community? Watch Columbus on the Record for in-depth, thoughtful, and balanced analysis of the issues and stories affecting Columbus and Central Ohio. It's on Fridays at 9:30 p.m. on WOSU-TV. In the weather forecast for today, sunny skies and a high near 80 degrees for today. Clear skies tonight and a low of 52. Partly sunny for Friday and a high of 75. And then for Saturday, cloudy skies on Saturday, a slight chance of rain, and a high of 75. Currently, 72 degrees.
Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. Of course, we heard from Richard Clark for the Obama campaign. And yesterday, we spoke with the senior foreign policy advisor for the John McCain campaign, Corey Shockey, joined us yesterday. So we've heard both sides in terms of foreign policy and national security. Well, we have some time here for an open forum. 614-292-8513. Of course, we have the whole issue of the bailout. President Bush saying, if you watched the address last night, the brief address, our economy is in danger. And he says, without this rescue, a long recession would be ahead with lots of job loss and very difficult positions for, you know, those average Americans who might want to get a car loan or a loan to expand a small business or a house loan. Maybe you could get the loan, but it might be at a very high rate of interest. So he says, the president says, that the $700 billion bailout is necessary. And in fact, both parties seem to be saying that in Congress. The question is, under what strictures will it be available? And you maybe heard in the first hour, if you were with us, some of the things being discussed, like a cap on executive salaries for those companies that get bailed out. The discussion about giving bankruptcy judges power to alter the terms of loans in foreclosure situations, and even ownership by the United States government and some of the bailed out firms, some of the ownership. Well, all of these issues at 614-292-8513. And we don't know whether, in fact, the presidential debate tomorrow evening that is scheduled in Oxford, Mississippi, we do not know whether that's going to happen. As you know, Senator McCain has proposed that the debate be postponed. Senator Obama has responded so that both he and Senator Obama could work on this bailout measure in Washington. Senator Obama has said, look, we both have airplanes. We can do two things at the same time. In Senator Obama's phrase, we can move forward in Washington and we can have the debate on Friday evening. And I wonder what you think of this situation. Do you think that you would like to hear both candidates on Friday evening discussing the bailout and other matters? Do you think the debate should be held or the debate should be postponed? And this just in from CNN on the web, McCain supporter Senator Lindsey Graham tells CNN the McCain campaign is proposing to the Presidential Debate Commission and the Obama camp that if there is no bailout deal by Friday, then that the first presidential debate should take the place of the vice presidential debate currently scheduled for next Thursday, October 2nd. In other words, they're saying if there's no bailout deal, says the McCain camp, by Friday, then we should postpone Friday night's debate and we should place it on October 2nd, next Thursday. Now, that was the date that we were going to see the vice presidential debate. And instead, we would replace that under this proposal with the presidential debate. And the vice presidential debate would be rescheduled for a date yet to be determined and to take place in Oxford, Mississippi, which is currently slated to be the site of the first presidential face-off this Friday. So do you think the debate should be postponed Friday? Is that a reasonable thing to do while senators go to work in Washington? Do you think the debate should be held? And what do you think of this bailout? We're at 614-292-8513 for about 20 minutes of open forum. Jeff is on the line. Hello, Jeff.
Good morning, Fred. I think the bailout, if it has to happen, and it probably does.
Sounds like that's what Congress, both parties, are saying.
Yes. I think that the securities should be bought at fair market value, today's fair market value, based on disinterested parties' evaluation. That is to say, they're worth far less than 100 cents on a dollar. If they were worth anywhere near their face value, we would not have a crisis.
Sure. And it might be difficult to determine what their face value is, because if you've got a security that is based, that is in fact mortgages bundled together, and we don't know how many of those mortgages are bad, it might be very difficult to determine face value. But you could set a face value. Experts, as you say, could do that.
You can. And analysis that I've heard says that of these mortgage packages, in general, no more than 10 to 20% are bad. Most of them are well-paying, good mortgages where people are up to date. So it's a few bad ones that have soured the pool. But I think that
I think that may be accurate. It stands to reason that most of these mortgages, or a great percentage of them, at least, I wouldn't want to hazard a guess as to the percentage, but a great percentage of them are going to be paid in good faith.
Right. But because everything's held up right now, the system is clogged as the way the government people are talking about it, the value is lower than, say, 80 cents on the dollar. I wouldn't presume to be expert enough to say what it's worth, but whatever they're worth, 40, 50 cents on the dollar, that's what the government should pay so that they've got time and a chance to retrieve the taxpayers' money, possibly with a profit. And in addition, I think the government should be in a position where they can break those packages down. They'll own them now, break those packages down, pull out the mortgages that are questionable, and have local workouts so that people who have income and have ability can have a restructured loan and stay in their homes, which will dramatically help the economy and the local markets just as much as this will help the banking market.
Sure. So you'd like to see some provision for restructuring mortgages on a local level so that people could indeed afford them. But is that the case even for people who unwisely entered into mortgages that they should have known they couldn't pay?
It's the case for those who can afford to make payments at reasonable rates.
Well, of course, how do you define reasonable rate?
Well, you've got market rates. That's easy. Today you can get a 30-year loan for 6.5%, a 15-year loan for near 6%. That's today's market rate. So if the federal government now owns those and you can establish that a family with this income in this house can afford, pick a number, 6.75%, then it should be restructured at 6.75%, something near today's current rate. And if they can make those payments, as a good banker would evaluate them, then they get to keep their house.
Well, I think that Congress is well aware of concerns such as yours, Jeff, and is striving to figure out a way they can do this bailout. I think no question the bailout's going to be done. But the question is, what are the benefits to the average consumer? And they are well aware of the kinds of concerns you're opposing this hour. We'll stand by and see what they do.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. And Donna is next. Hello, Donna.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Okay. Well, the reason I called is I haven't heard anybody mention the fact that these companies that basically created all these products. It wasn't done overnight. It was done probably over the last, I don't know, 7, 8, 10 years. But the people in the hierarchy of these companies who made the decisions to get into these kind of products were all paid performance bonuses every year, and a lot of them were a lot of money they made because of the figures that they ended up supposedly showing the company made. And I think that before we put $1 of taxpayer money into that fund, that every bonus paid to these top percent of all the corporations, officers, should be recaptured. That bonuses for the last 7 years should be put in that pot, and then we can make up the difference. I haven't heard anything that would ever discourage anybody from doing the same thing again. If the taxpayers are going to go out there and bail them out after they have they're going to go out and bail them out after they've done this thing, and there's no punishment to them. If they don't experience the sacrifice, then there's nothing to stop them from doing the same thing in the future.
Now, Donna, you raise a very important issue. What are going to be the criteria and the particular points in this bailout agreement that will stop this from happening again? Some kind of safeguard, some kind of regulation. I mean,
and
both
some
President...
kind of pain for those who created this, because if they walk away with millions and billions in bonuses, and then somebody else is left to pay for all the benefit of it all, there's no reason for them to be honest or have any integrity in the future.
Donna, my guess is that politically that we won't see a rescinding of bonuses already promised. My guess is that those are contractual and we won't see it. I could be wrong, but we'll pay attention and look. But on the other hand, safeguards and regulation, reasonable regulation for the future, I think certainly both presidential candidates and even the Bush administration support.
Okay, and another thing is I think the presidential debates should be held tonight.
Tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm. They were set up, and I don't think that the whole country's future depends on Barack and McCain being sitting in Washington. I think we need to hear from them now, and we need to hear what their plans are for the future.
Okay, Donna, appreciate your call. So, Donna, we'd like to see the debate go on Friday night as scheduled. What do you think? Go on or postpone? Joan is on the line. Hi, Joan.
Hello. Definitely do the debates. And I think it's very interesting that they would like to try to move the presidential debate onto the vice presidential night. They don't want Sarah Palin to be answering a question. They know what she might say. I mean, McCain is backing out of this because he has no answers on the economy. He is afraid to face Barack Obama on the economy. Barack gives thoughtful, reasoned responses to these things, not shoot-from-the-hip responses. And I think it's absurd to think of canceling this. John McCain hasn't cast a vote in Washington since April. Why is his vote right now going to make a difference?
Two points about that, Joan. Senator McCain's camp apparently is going to propose that the vice presidential debate be rescheduled, and in fact rescheduled specifically in Oxford, Mississippi. So we would see that debate.
No, don't change it. Do it exactly as it is now. The interviewers are there they are ready with their questions. If it's an athletic event and there's a no-show, you forfeit the game. And I think McCain should show up or shut up.
Well, Joan, thanks for your comments.
We're having
it up in forum here, talking about the bailout, the presidential debate, maybe other issues as well. And J.D. is next. Hello, J.D.
Hi, Brad. I got to agree with your last caller. I mean, let's keep the debates going. If John McCain can't manage to run a campaign and have these debates and also deal with his business as a senator, he's got no business, you know, running for president. As a president, he'd have to deal with multiple problems at the same time. It's like, you know, geez, guys, the 21st century. Learn to multitask.
J.D., let me give you a counter-argument on that one. I mean, supposing that we're wondering when this bailout is going to be configured and voted on. I mean, it could be as early as this evening. We don't know. But supposing it's stretched into the evening hours on a Friday. I mean, Congress is scheduled to adjourn Friday. But supposing it stretches into the evening hours and then you had a debate, both Senator McCain and Senator Obama would be missing in terms of their participation in the congressional debate on the bailout. What do you think?
Yeah, well, here's the thing for it. It's John McCain and Barack Obama aren't needed there. John, in particular, is not heading any committee. He doesn't bring any particular expertise to the discussion of the bailout. As your last caller pointed out, he hasn't been in Congress to cast votes on other things for months. Surely he has got experts and economic experts who can be in Washington and, you know, give his campaign suggestions about what's going on. the same thing as he would if, you know, in 6 months, if he were president, he's dealing with multiple crises. He's got, he would have staff do the same thing. I think if he's unable to manage this job and manage his campaign at the same time, it's a pretty clear indication he doesn't have what it takes to be the president and juggling the multiple problems that a president's going to face.
So, J.D., you're saying Congress doesn't need either one of their votes. They can proceed without them.
Well, it's not a matter of if they're needing their votes. I mean, they can rush back to do a vote, but there's no talk about actually having the vote tomorrow night.
Well, we don't know when the vote's going to occur, actually. We don't have a clue.
It sounds like McCain's talking about trying to go there so we can have a place at the table arguing what's going on.
Well,
and given everything, I don't think if it were coming down to, you know, just a matter of votes, I have no doubt that the Republican and Democratic leadership would be able to schedule the critical vote if such were needed, at the 11th hour Friday night or early Saturday.
Sure, they could schedule that. You're right. And they could schedule it around the debate if it were critical to do that. That's true.
I mean, it sounds to me like McCain just wants to, you know, sort of make sure he's got a place at the table. But, I mean, given that he hasn't had a coherent policy on the bailout, I mean, he keeps jumping back and forth about what he's had to say. He keeps changing his mind as to whether there's even been, you know, whether the economy is fundamentally strong or not. He needs to get on with having a debate. This election is way too important to, you know, for him to duck out the last minute and play these games with the American people. We need to.
Okay, J.D., I understand your point. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Of course, President Bush is going to be meeting apparently today with both Senators McCain and Obama. And the question becomes, where do they devote their energies? Senator Obama says the debate should go on. Senator McCain says the debate should be postponed. And Maria is here. Hi, Maria.
Good morning. It's still morning.
It is.
I have really two comments. The first one is, yes, let the debates go on as scheduled and planned, because I am afraid what they will really try to do, the McCain group will try to eliminate Palin's presence, her debate. I have to say that poor woman, God help her when she gets up there with Biden. I think that will be pitiful. However, the other thing that I would like to say is that, and I do agree with everybody that said anything so far, I also am concerned that they are rushing into this kind of bailout. How long would it take to look at anybody's books and decide how much bailout is needed, who has done what? And, man, we're just moving in. Like, let's get in there really fast, give them the money, and act like everything is A-okay.
Well, it's a very quick move to spend $700 billion, isn't it? Yeah,
it's
awfully fast.
It is when I'm having to pay part of it.
Yeah.
It may be
yeah.
a teeny little part, but it's still mine, and it's going to mean something to me.
According to Business Week reported on the show today, Tao said it would be $2,300 for every man, woman, and child in the United States would be the share.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and where is the money coming from besides us? The taxpayer, I mean, the money has to be coming from somewhere besides us. Is it China? Are we getting loans from them? Where is it?
Well, we'll offer, apparently, as I understand it, we'll offer treasury bonds for sale, you know, to help finance this. And you know, other sources, foreign sources, will buy those bonds, providing some of the capital.
I see. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Maria. Thanks for your call. On to Janice. Hello, Janice. You're on the air.
Hey, Fred. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to put my vote in for having the debate Friday night. I think it's really, really important to the American people, and it does look like John McCain is trying to dodge some issues, and I don't appreciate that. It looks like he's covering for Sarah Palin.
How do you say, let me ask you, Janice, how do you say covering for Sarah Palin when, in fact, apparently, according to Lindsey Graham, Senator Lindsey Graham, the McCain campaign does say, yes, we're going to have a vice presidential debate, but we just have to postpone it?
Well, I don't trust the process. Anytime something gets postponed, it could get postponed again. The American public is depending on this schedule of debates in order to make their decisions and to discover the candidates. And I believe that the McCain campaign believes that the longer they can postpone exposing Sarah Palin to the public, that the better off they'll be.
Mm.
And I think it's just tricky politics, and I'm very suspect of their maneuvers. And I appreciate your questions, and your other callers are so fantastic.
Janice, thanks for your call.
Well, thank you so much.
And we're having an open forum here for another 9 minutes or so. John is on the line. Hi, John. John, are you with us? Okay, John is not. Let us talk with Julia. Hi, Julia.
Hi. Since the role of the vice president is to jump in and take the place of the president in the case of an emergency, I think that we should have the vice presidential debates this Friday and let Biden and Palin show just how vice presidential they can be.
Well, now that's a very interesting idea. Flip the debates. Have the vice presidential debate this Friday and have on October 2nd, next Thursday, when the vice presidential debate was scheduled, have the presidential debate then.
Yes, absolutely. And with that, they can show just how well prepared they are in case of emergency to take over for the president. It's an excellent opportunity for both of them.
Interesting proposal, but of course, as you know, when any candidate prepares for a debate, weeks of preparation, I mean, any candidate, weeks of preparation go into that. And you could reasonably, I mean, both vice presidential candidates could reasonably argue that this is a little premature. But on the other hand, you point out this is the president says a national emergency.
Yes, absolutely. And they can show their stuff. I'd love to see it.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen, but it's an intriguing idea, Julia. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks for your call. Let's try John again. John, are you with us here? Hi. Do I have the right name, caller? Do you hear me on your line? Because, John, you're not responding, and yet you're there. Well, okay, we don't hear anything. Let us go to our next caller here, Rod. Hello, Rod.
Yes, hello. I was kind of on the fence as to whether or not the debate should be held or not. You know, negotiations are in a very sensitive position right now in Washington. But it seems like most of the callers want the debate to go forward. Basically, you know, what I wanted to say is we do need a national discussion on how we got into this mess in the first place. We've been building homes that people can't afford, you know, these McMansions and so forth. And as, you know, it was brought out that the SEC hasn't been doing its job in terms of trying to keep the, market under control.
You're talking about the Securities and Exchange Commission?
Yes. Although basically, you know, it's been done at the behest of the administration and Congress. And I think, you know, that, you know, McCain's proposal to fire the SEC commissioner is just sort of putting a Band-Aid on cancer.
Well, Senator McCain's proposal to fire the head of the SEC was roundly criticized by the Wall Street Journal, as a matter of fact, which said, look, this is a fellow who's doing his job. There's no reason to let him go. And the problem is broader than that. But, of course, you know, we have a Democratic-controlled Congress. We've had a Republican presidency. And you would think somewhere along the line that everybody might have sensed this coming on and might have sought, well, some remedy along the line, perhaps more regulation. I mean, you don't want to over-regulate the markets. That's not good. But, you know, this caught everybody by surprise, and you wonder if it should.
Yeah. It really shouldn't have caught everybody by surprise. I read a book some time ago called The Coming Real Estate Crash. By Gray Emerson Cardiff, and basically it predicted exactly what was going to happen, with the housing market. Basically what happened was we got into, you know, a speculation binge, and that bid up the price of the houses. And as it had been brought out on your program, we had a lot of people that basically couldn't afford these houses to begin with. You know, the numbers were manipulated by the people that wanted to sell mortgages.
In some cases, that's true. They were under such pressure to make a mortgage that they manipulated. In other words, you'd walk in the door. We heard this on NPR and All Things Considered. And This American Life, somebody walks in the door, they make $35,000 a year, and the mortgage lender is saying, well, we'll just put down that they make $140,000. And that's what they did in some cases.
And that's what's known as leverage. And,
what's known as fraud,
any first-year college student can tell you that leverage can be a good thing, but it can also be a very bad thing. Basically, you end up, if you get caught with your pants down, you're going to end up being bankrupt or worse.
Mm-hmm. Rod, thanks. Got to move on. A couple of more callers here before we close. Glennon is with us. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I definitely think that unless there's a vote on Friday night, that they should both be at the debate. And I do agree that there is some fear in the McCain campaign that Sarah Palin will really screw things up debating Biden. But I also think that, you know, the economy is really one of McCain's weakest issues. And, you know, having this unsettled when he goes into a debate is very bad for him.
Why do you say that? Why, of course, since Senator Obama and Senator McCain have issued a joint statement about this situation, saying a bailout under certain conditions is necessary, why do you see that as weakness if it's unsettled?
Because this, I mean, this looks like this is a Republican issue. It's Republican, you know, it was a Republican Congress for most of the time. It's, you know, a Republican administration for all of this.
All right. So
and McCain.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
McCain has said that he doesn't know much about the economy. Up until a couple weeks ago, he was saying the economy is pretty strong. I mean, he looks pretty bad on this issue. And he also, neither one of these guys are great debaters. And so going into a debate on and you know, when they're, you know, it is supposed to be foreign policy, but they will probably talk about the economy.
Oh, surely they will. Absolutely. You can't avoid talking about the economy. That's right. Yeah. So you're saying Senator McCain would look a lot better if the situation were solved and he could be perceived as having played an instrumental role in that.
Exactly. And I think that's the main reason he wants to do this.
Well, I must tell you, if I were running Senator McCain's campaign, I would probably advise him to do precisely this because, you know, in fact, it would be better for him as a candidate if the situation were solved and if he could be perceived as having played a significant role. That would be wise campaign tactics, no?
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Well, Lennon, appreciate your call.
Yep, thank you.
And here is Molly. Hello, Molly. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I want the debates to go on. I think it's important that both candidates show leadership at a time like this. And I also would like to see more reporting about McCain's involvement, which deregulated the banks and led us to our current situation now.
Molly, we lost part of that. McCain's involvement in, I'm sorry.
McCain's involvement in the Keating Five.
Keating Five, yeah.
Which deregulated banks and led us to our current position now.
Yeah, this is a situation from some years back that I must say, because we haven't had new reporting on it, I could not pretend to be current about it. But you'd like to hear about it, and I think you will as the campaign goes on.
Thank you.
Thanks, Molly. You know, we're going to have another open forum tomorrow to continue discussing about this at the 11 o'clock hour. So because the concerns are so great here about the bailout, we may know a great deal more tomorrow. We may know more about the bailout. It may have been settled, and we'll know what some of the provisions are. We also should know, hopefully by tomorrow at this time, whether or not we're going to have those debates. And Arnie, we've got about a minute and a half high.
Yeah, I'll be very quick. It's my view that all of the debate should end not later than 30 September. Are you with me?
That they should end by the 30th of September?
Right, because absentee ballots go into place in most states on October 1st, and people are going to start to vote then and there.
That's right. They will. The first week in October is when people are going to start to be voting. In Ohio, estimates somewhere between 30, 40, maybe up to 50% will be voting around in there. That's right. And, of course, what happens in debates could change people's minds.
And, Fred, because I was at the tail end of all the people today, I figured that it was only going to be a minute or a minute and a half. But I thank you kindly, and we'll talk next time.
Thanks, and we'll have another open forum at this time tomorrow. Thanks to Amy Jurevich at the controls. I want to thank Elizabeth Wick, who's been a production assistant with us for the past year and done a phenomenal job. And this is her final day today. So, Liz, and many of you have talked to Liz on the phone, and we thank you for being with us. Tyler Adams will continue in that job, and Tyler is also doing a fine job. He'll be with us. We thank Tyler as well, and Open Line producer Linda Taylor. Open forum at this time tomorrow on listener-supported WOSU. WOSU HD 820 Columbus, streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820, NPR News.